Chapter 16. Jag and Han got the panel covering the main motivators for the hangar exterior doors down into the floor, revealing the machinery beyond. Jag shook his head.
I do fine with mechanical gear, but I prefer to have manuals and charts on hand. Jaina's better at this sort of thing than I am.
Han smiled in combined pride and self-appreciation.
Don't worry. She got it from me.
He pointed a long, calloused forefinger at an expansive cluster of chips.
The main security module will be there. We just have to figure out which chip. Out of, 300 or so. Sure, no problem.
Han took a moment to wave at his daughter, who was visible in the bridge viewpoint of Jason's shuttle, then bent for his toolkit.
Just stand back and learn something.
Alone, all but forgotten except by a black-clad guardsman at the door into the command salon who watched her every movement, Leia stood listening to the exchange between her son and the Corellian captain. Frowning, she moved to a monitor at the stern end of the bridge and leaned in so close that her right ear was adjacent to the device's main speaker. She shook her head and returned to the center of the bridge walkway, then stepped clean off of it, dropping nimbly to land beside the bald-headed intelligence officer who had been providing Jason with data. Rather than being alarmed, he offered her a sardonic smile.
"Is this an attack?"
"If it were, it would be over by now. Can you give me an isolated audio feed of just the Corellian side of the transmission, so I can hear it without all this ambient noise?"
"I could, of course, but I won't. Technically, you're a prisoner of war."
"You mean I'm the enemy?"
"Yes, that's what I mean."
"I'm also Colonel Solo's mother, and this vessel was named for my other son. I don't want to see either one destroyed, which might happen if my worst-case suspicions turn out to be true and I don't get some cooperation." The officer looked at her for a long moment, then sighed. Over Leia's shoulder, he called,
"Tebbutt, isolation helmet, please."
Tebbutt opened a cabinet drawer beside her station and withdrew a helmet. Not a piece of protective gear for pilots. It was smaller, smoother, with a full-face polarizing visor. She lobbed it to the intelligence officer, who set it beside his monitor, typed a pair of commands on his keyboard, and then handed it to Leia. She donned it and immediately heard Captain Hawklaw speaking.
"Asking us to bear a tremendously disproportionate burden of the cost of rebuilding. If I agree to the numbers you suggest, the Corellian system would be reduced to poverty for generations."
There was a long pause.
"No, that's not justice. That's vindictiveness. And it presupposes that the entire burden of blame, that every wrong done in the course of these events, should be laid at the feet of the Corellian government."
There was no other noise. No background conversation. No clattering of fingers across keyboards. Hastily, Leia removed the helmet.
"Can you send a message, a text message, to Jason's monitor, so he can read it, but Captain Hawklaw can't see it?"
"Of course."
"Here's my message."
She told him, and as the words registered, she could see his instant decision to send the message on to his commander. Impatient, Jaina glanced at her chrono. Leia had to be doing a magnificent job of delaying Jason, but even so, they couldn't stay here forever. Her mouse droid had drunk in much of the raw telemetry data from the shuttle's memory, but there was plenty more to go. She saw Jag turn away from helping her father, and blaster pistol drawn, trot over to the hangar's internal doors. He keyed a command to open them and stayed to one side, pistol aimed. But it was Zek still in Alliance armor, who marched in. As soon as the doors slid shut again, the tall Jedi relaxed. Talking with Jag, he caught sight of Jaina. Fist upraised, he waved to her, a gesture of success. She nodded. One more task down. But they couldn't relax, couldn't lose focus, could never, ever lose focus. As Kytus continued expressing his very reasonable demands, words appeared at the bottom of his monitor screen. Jedi Solo reports no bridge or personnel noises in enemy transmission. Communications has analyzed and confirms. Suggests enemy command ship bears only skeleton crew or is automated. Despite the distraction, Kytus did not miss the import of Captain Hawklaw's last words. He adopted a look of mild confusion.
Step down? Why would I?
Because if you do, we might be able to transform this conversation from a simple negotiation to a genuine peace. We might bring an end to this war. I could take the fact of your cooperation to the Confederation as a whole. My sources tell me that a concession like that would earn a lot of favor within the Confederation.
Kytus felt a flash of irritation.
That's not on the table, Captain.
He was also growing impatient. Why had the Confederates not sprung their trap? Perhaps they would not until it became clear that the negotiations could not, would not, succeed. Well, he could make them aware of that right now.
Captain, you've heard my terms. I will not budge on any of them. In fact, as I grow annoyed with you, I will make them harsher. I'll give you 10 standard minutes to accept them as is. If you do not, when we begin talking again, you'll be in a worse bargaining position.
He switched off the monitor, and Tebbutt, alert, cut the transmission altogether. Kytus turned. The bridge walkway behind him was empty.
Where is my... Where is Jedi Solo?
The intelligence officer gestured toward the doors at the stern end of the bridge.
The guard there accompanied her back into the command salon.
Ah.
Kytus concealed the sudden chill those words stabbed into his heart.
I'll be back in 10 minutes.
At a trot, Darth Kytus headed aft for what he hoped would not be a confrontation with his mother. Center Point Station, Fire Control Chamber. As with every such enterprise, the use of an unbelievably complicated, incalculably important piece of machinery in the hands of the military, the involved parties were divided into groups, each of them secretly condescending to an uncomprehending of the others. In the control areas of this large chamber, where consoles, keyboards, monitors, readouts, and data jacks predominated, technicians were hard at work. They analyzed energy throughputs, calculated damage to systems from anticipated energy spikes, theorized about side effects, and discussed recent hypotheses about the physics of gravity. In one open area, where once a twice-human-height droid that had believed it was Anakin Solo had lived and died, military officers in the uniforms of the Corellian Defense Force now waited. One of them, a woman in white instead of the lower-ranking browns, irritably consulted her chrono. Tall and broad-shouldered, she had an intelligent expression and a gaze that moved everywhere in the chamber, cataloging hundreds of details and events. The third group, nearest the doors leading out of this chamber, was made up of government representatives. Sadrus Koyan, a short, burly man with thinning hair and an aggressive manner, had a gaze as sweeping and restless as that of the white-uniformed woman. But he seemed less to be registering details than waiting for some signal to satisfy his impatience. Beside him stood Denjak Stepler, a younger man, with bland but confidence-inspiring features. Tepler had worn many occupational hats since the crisis had begun in Corellia. He was now Minister of Information, a post disparagingly and accurately referred to in other offices as Minister of Propaganda. Around these two men were arrayed aides and advisers, all dressed in expensive, subdued business garments that were so similar in style that they, too, might as well have been uniforms. Finally, Coyen's patience broke.
"What's the hold-up, Admiral Delpin?"
The woman in the white uniform moved toward him, stopping at the edge of her group as though it were an invisible national border.
"Sim firings are suggesting an unacceptable chance of catastrophic failure. We're locking down and locking out the subsystems that are most likely to be damaged by overloads. It's just a matter of a few minutes."
"Solo is going to jump out of there before we can even get the thing online."
Tepler shook his head.
"I don't think so, sir. Captain Hawklaw says they're in a brief break between conversations, but that Colonel Solo is giving Hawklaw so much to work with, she could probably stall him until her next birthday."
"Oh."
Mollified, Coyen nodded.
"All right, then."
One of the technicians at the control board nodded in response to something he heard over his earpiece. He turned and flashed five fingers at Admiral Delpin. She, in turn, caught Coyen's eye.
5 minutes.
Coyen nodded and mopped sweat from his forehead and cheeks with his sleeve.
"Good."
Star System MZX-32905, near Bimiel. Alima wondered about worshippers. Now that she was a goddess, she should have some. At the moment, of course, she did not look very goddess-like. She sat in the topmost chamber of Lumia's former habitat, the chamber with the curved bookcase-laden walls and transparasteel dome, in a ridiculously comfortable stuffed chair, in her old body, the crippled one. In moments, though, she would shed that body again, float free through the galaxy, restore balance to the universe, and please herself. How stupid Lumia had been to use this gift to further some ancient Sith agenda. Speaking of the Sith, she would have to deal with them soon. Once she had reduced Leia to a tearful, useless wreck, as she imagined Luke now to be, she would turn her attention to Korriban and begin to exterminate the dangerous pest colony the Sith enclave there constituted. It would take time. Her last projection to Kashyyyk had tired her immensely. She had slept for days afterward. That would probably be true again this time, but Lumia's notes had made it clear that with practice came stamina. Alima relaxed, closing her eyes, and invited the immense pool of dark power waiting hundreds of meters below her, in the asteroid proper, to ascend to her, to flow through her. She stiffened as she felt the power grope its way blindly toward where she reclined. As it washed across her, it seemed to be half hot waterfall, half galvanizing electric current, but too full of malicious emotion to be cleansing or refreshing. It imparted to her a sense of greater power and destiny, yes, but it was also an invasion of herself, and that part of it she did not relish. Now fully intermingled with the dark power, she set her mind adrift, looking for familiar presences in the Force. She knew where to start looking, at the cluster of presences where long-life patients warred with animalistic strength and rage. The world of the Wookiees. But Han and Leia were not among those presences. Vexed, Alima broadened her search,
Minutes passed,
with each minute taxing her personal energy further. And then she found them. Not together, but close by each other, with thousands of lives around them. But only thousands, not millions or billions. That suggested they were on a ship somewhere between worlds. She propelled herself to be near them, then went looking among the other presences, the other glows in the Force, for one that would be suitable. Some radiated too brightly. They would be too strong for her to merge with. Others were too dim. They would not anchor her as she needed to be anchored. One stood out. It was bright with power, but very pure, not marked by anger or sophistication. She circled in toward it, charmed by its simplicity, its innocence. As she touched it, she decided that it was a child, a human girl asleep. The child stirred as Alima reached her, almost coming awake, but Alima poured out comforting thoughts through the Force, emotions of safety and security, of being in the nest, surrounded by thousands like her, all clicking and whirring on their many legs, all nearly identical. Her emotions did not so much soothe as stifle the child, but that was enough. Alima wrapped herself around the girl. Now she was fixed in that place. She had a base from which to go hunting. She went looking for Han Solo. Aboard the Anakin Solo, Kytus strode into his command salon. Only officers were there.
"Where are Jedi Solo and the guard?"
Captain Neville pointed toward the stern doors out of the salon.
"Princess Leia asked for some privacy. The guard accompanied her to your private office."
The chill in Kytus's heart intensified. Without answering, he dashed toward the doors. Moments later, he entered his private office. The guard, a muscular man with yellow skin, was there, slumped in Kytus's desk chair, unconscious. A bruise was already beginning to appear on his chin. Leia was nowhere to be seen. Kytus shoved him and the rolling chair aside. Hearing but not looking as the chair toppled and deposited the guard on the floor. Kytus brought up his desk monitor and clicked it over instantly to his secret chambers, where Alana now lived. There she was, curled up on a little daybed. Nearby, an entertainment monitor flickered, unwatched, its screen displaying an entertainment broadcast in which Ewoks spoke Basic and befriended shipwrecked little girls. Kytus tensed, remembering the deception he had perpetrated in Tenel Ka's palace, but saw her features and relaxed. This was the real Alana. He thumbed his comlink to life.
"Security. Find Jedi Solo and report her location to me."
"At once, sir."
But it wasn't at once. 30 agonizingly long seconds went by. Then the voice returned.
"Sir, she's approaching your personal hangar bay."
"Alone?"
"Alone, sir."
"Alert the guards there. Secure both the internal and external bay doors. If she tries to perform a bypass on the internal doors or begins to cut through them with her lightsaber, unsecure the outer doors, open them, and vent the hangar to space. I doubt she'll want to play in hard vacuum."
"Yes, sir."
There was a pause.
"Doors secured remotely, sir. But the door guards aren't responding. There's no sign of them on holocam."
Thoughts clicked through Kytus's mind like sabacc cards going through an automated shuffler.
"She was under observation until moments ago. So she couldn't have gotten rid of the guards herself. Conclusion, she has allies aboard. Or she smuggled in allies on her yacht. Probably the latter. She doesn't have Alana. So Alana was not the goal of her mission."
He pulled out his datapad and used it to transmit a query to YVH-908, the combat droid serving as Alana's bodyguard. The droid sent back an immediate response, indicating no intrusions, no problems. But to be sure, Titus moved to the wall panel concealing the secret door that led to those chambers. It opened before him, and he stepped through into one of the best-kept secrets aboard ship. The narrow corridor led aft to a succession of small rooms that almost no one living knew about. A few steps later, another door opened for him, presenting him with the same happy view of Alana he had seen on his monitor. She opened her eyes, groggy, and yawned.
No more work?
I'm sorry. Lots more work. But I wanted to stop in to look at you.
I dreamed there was a lady here.
Well, have another good dream. I'll be back soon. He smiled, then stepped out again and let the door shut behind him. No, Alana had not been Leia's objective. So what is? Sabotage of the long-range turbo lasers? Surely she knows that Luke took care of them. They won't be repaired for weeks or months. Engineering, commence a tiered diagnostic scan of all the ship's combat and sensor systems.
Yes, sir.
The security officer's voice crackled across his comlink almost immediately.
Sir, Jedi Solo reached the bay doors. We had them locked down, but they opened right up for her, and she walked in. Holocam image inside doesn't show her. The holocams must have been subverted.
Titus hissed in frustration.
Vent the outer doors immediately.
We did, sir. Issued the command, I mean. The system acknowledged, but exterior holocams show the doors still shut.
Bring up all weapons. Prepare to blast that yacht to plasma the instant it launches.
Remembering the stratagem he'd used on Hapes, Titus felt a new fear. Perhaps Leia and accomplices had brought a bomb aboard. He never would have suspected it of her, but the idea had a beautiful simplicity to it. A sufficiently large explosion in his private hangar would cripple or destroy the Anakin Solo. Worse, it would harm or kill Alana. He spun, re-entered the room he had just left, and smiled down at his daughter.
I was wrong. Work is done for a little while. Let's go for a fun ride.
Center Point Station, Fire Control Chamber. The chief technician's voice was quiet and somber.
Anakin Solo imprinting lockout bypasses are holding. Energy charge is holding. Targeting system is holding. We read ready.
Admiral Delpin nodded.
Acknowledge ready.
She turned Koyan's way.
We await your authorization to launch.
Koyan gulped.
Launch authorized. Admiral Delpin, I also authorize you to fire the weapon. Don't wait for me to authorize. Fire when you think the moment is perfect.
Acknowledged.
Delpin raised her comlink.
Force Yimmy, move in. Force Zex, all squadrons, make your jump and commence your attack.
She paused long enough to hear two confirmations, then turned back toward Koyan.
We're committed.